This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at HollywoodBlends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a multi-award-winning actress, singer, and producer who's perhaps best remembered for her unforgettable portrayal of Lucy Ewing on the phenomenally successful TV series Dallas, for which she received two Young Artist Awards, a Bambi Award, and a TV Land Pop Culture Award. But beyond that iconic role, our guest has had a long and diverse career. On the big screen, she's appeared in dozens of movies, including Ragin' Cajun, Deadly Bet, Center of the Web, Detonator, Edge of Salvation, A Unicorn for Christmas, Heaven Sent, Ladybug, Final Recovery, and many more. And besides Dallas, she's appeared in many classic TV shows, including Happy Days, Eight is Enough, Policewoman, Knots Landing, Laverne and Shirley, Murder, She Wrote, and Married with Children, to name only a few. You've also seen her in a number of TV movies and miniseries, including The Fall of the House of Usher, Point of Entry, The Michaels, Road Less Traveled, Second Chance Christmas, Starting Up Love, A Welcome Home Christmas, and of course the 2004 Dallas reunion movie, Return to South Fork. Our guest has also a beautiful voice, as we all heard in the season 2 episode of Dallas, called Runaway, in which she sang the classic country song Silver Threads and Golden Needles. She also had an international hit song in 1984 called C'est la vie. And beyond all of that, our guest is a strong advocate for autism awareness as an ambassador for Actors for Autism, an organization providing improv and acting workshops for children and adults with autism. She's also worked with an organization called You Gotta Believe, which helps teenaged foster children find permanent families. I'm delighted to welcome to our show the wonderful television icon herself, Charlene Tilton. Charlene, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Harvey. Boy, that was a trip down memory lane, hearing all those titles.
Well, you've done a lot. And I want to start by acknowledging that you've spoken publicly many times about your very difficult childhood. You were raised by a single mother who struggled with significant mental health problems. You had no father figure in your life. By the time you were 15, you were living on your own in an apartment. Before Larry Hagman came along and changed your life in such a big way, what did you think your life was going to be like?
I always had a sense that there was something more out there. My mother was very mentally ill. She suffered from severe schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. And the symptoms were just, it was outrageous. But anyway, she was institutionalized quite a bit. And from the time I was 5 years old to 8 years old, she was institutionalized. So for those 3 years, I was in foster care. But when I was reunited with her right before my eighth birthday, she did the best she could up until I turned 15, and then I had to move out. She was not capable anymore. She had to go back in again. But when I was brought back with my mom, we didn't have a TV. I would go to the Sears store on Santa Monica and near Western Avenue in Los Angeles and go to the TV department because they had, you know, all the TVs and 50 televisions. And I would watch the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family. And I would just think, the Brady Bunch, their house is so clean. There's not a hoarder there. It's clean. Their biggest problem is Jan allergic to Tiger the dog, or is it the flea powder? Oh, it's the flea powder. Thank God. We are all this. Well, and I was like, how? I was like, there's more out there. There's more to living a decent life out there. And I wanted to be, I was surrounded in Hollywood where I was raised by Paramount Studios, Desilu, Screen Gems, and all the studios. And I just wanted to, I would hang out at those gates of the studios after school and just dream of being inside those gates where I knew magic happened.
You probably don't know this about me, Charlene, but before I started this show, I was a family and criminal court judge for 26 years. Did you know that?
No.
Well, As you can imagine, I dealt with many children in your situation, and sometimes children with mentally ill parents feel guilty because they feel like they somehow caused it. Did you ever feel that way?
Yes. Ooh, I did. That's a hard-hitting question. Wow, that one really got to me. I did because my mother had a twin sister. And when my mother was institutionalized and I was in Effingham, Illinois, my mother's twin sister drove, and I'm not sure where the institution was, but we drove a long, long way. And the twin sister took me to see my mom, and she was in a room and she had a straitjacket on, my mom did, and she was sitting in her own body excretions and everything, and I was like 6 years old. And her twin sister said, "This is your fault. You did this to your mother. This is all because of you." And I'm 6 years old. And I was like trying to scream, "I'll be good, mommy. I promise. I promise I'll be okay. I'll be good." But and yes, so not only because naturally, but I actually had someone else telling me. The twin sister was loopy herself in a different way. She was crazy too, but in a different way.
Well, I just have to tell you, my heart goes out to you so much. If I were there with you, I'd give you a big hug because even without the twisted aunt, kids still feel that way. And it's so wrong. Obviously, it had nothing to do with you. It was a chemical imbalance. And I just want you to know the fact that you've been so outspoken and so candid about mental illness has helped many, many people who, especially in those days, nobody talked about it.
Nobody talked about it. It was swept under the carpet, and there was nothing, there was very little I could do about it as well. For example, when I got to Dallas, we would be filming on the sound stage, and back then there was no cell phones. We had a phone on the stage, and it would ring, the "Charlene, phone's for you." I'd get over there, and "Miss Tilton, your mother is running up and down Gower Street naked, and you got to come." I said, "What can I do? Where can we put her?" "Well, there's nothing we can do. She's not a harm to herself or anybody else." I said, "But she's running up and down naked. She thinks the CIA is after her. She th thinks that, that people are going to come and put a helmet on her and monitor her thoughts." She was like, literally, I said, "I could, I, there were no resources to me back then." It was, so here I am. And then okay, wanted on the set. So I'd have to go from that to working as an actress and focus on doing a scene.
Can't even imagine how difficult that would have been. And I applaud you for the work you've done with You've Got to Believe, because that's an organization that helps find permanent families for foster teenagers. You yourself were in a foster home much younger. I just think you are really quite remarkable. And I started the interview deliberately to talk about that because you're always asked about Dallas. And I think that before our audience hears about the Dallas stuff, I want them to know that the woman behind Lucy Ewing was a real human being who's had her own issues. Now, you've spoken many times about your very close friendship with Larry Hagman. He was obviously a significant father figure and a mentor for you. What would you say was the most important thing he ever taught you?
I remember one time on Dallas, he taught me a lot of things, but one time on Dallas, he said, "Don't worry, be happy." And that was before the song came out. "Don't worry, be happy." But that was his motto. And he said, "Look, you can let all the pressures and everything drive you to a nervous breakdown. Trust me, it happened to me." I said, "What?" He goes, "Oh yeah, during I Dream a Genie." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "And I learned from that." He goes, "I'm enjoying all this now." And he had his own issues, but he really stressed, enjoy the moment, be present, be in the moment. And he really was. I struggle with that though every day just because of my upbringing. Half the time I didn't know where my mom was, if she was talking to Martians or if she was going to be naked or urinating in Tupperware or our house was covered in cockroaches or I didn't know what was happening. My go-to is fight or flight. And I'm 67 years old, so I am at this age trying to not operate like this. It's something I'm learning.
It's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge. It's a lifelong emotional scar. It's so interesting you said that Larry taught you to enjoy the moment. We've had a lot of Dallas people on the show, Patrick Duffy, Linda Gray, Morgan Brittany, Audrey Landers. And when I asked them, what did they learn from Larry? Most of them said it was the work ethic, the stellar work
Yes.
ethic.
Oh, unbelievable. He was the best. I did learn my work ethic from him. Oh, you were, 20 minutes early. You knew your lines. And, people ask me, how did I not get caught up in, I was 17 when I started the show. How did I not go off the rails or whatever? And I couldn't. Not only Larry Hagman, but everybody on that show, Barbara Bel Geddes, Oscar nominated actress, Tony, First Lady of the Stage, and Jim Davis, and all these people, they had the most stellar work ethics. And even though I was young and they took care of me, it was just expected. I mean, no one coddled me or babied me. It was expected. And I watched them and I learned by being in that environment. So I do a movie today. I show up with costumes. I show up with props. I show up every time I work. I get to work with the same people over and over again because my work ethic is phenomenal.
Well, that stood you in good stead. And the other thing that I really admire about the Dallas crowd is that Larry had a way of creating a family atmosphere on and off the set.
Yes.
Now, from what you've seen from being in so many other shows, was the atmosphere on the set of Dallas unique?
I believe it was unique. Of course, I didn't know that. I didn't have a lot to compare that to. I was only 17, but we were like a family. We still get together and talk to each other. I'll be seeing Linda Gray, Patrick Duffy, and Steve Keneally this weekend. So we're doing a get together in Knoxville, Tennessee, and Fanboy Expo. And it's wonderful getting to see them.
Well, please say hello from me.
I will. I will.
I have to say it's kind of sad that Larry Hagman never won an Emmy or a Golden Globe or a Screen Actors Guild Award after everything he did. Isn't that surprising?
It's bizarre because when you watch Dallas, and I have not even watched every episode, and I hadn't seen it in years. So during the pandemic, it came on Amazon Prime. I started watching it along with the rest of the world because people come up to us now at Linda Gray, Patrick Duffy, and I did Comic-Con, German Comic-Con, and in Germany, 50,000 people came up to us, and the people who were watching it again, rediscovering it, or people that were younger than I am when I started the show, just crying, saying, "Oh, we love you, we love you." And I watched the show now, and Larry Hagman was one of the best actors of all time. Of all time. Every little nuance, every. And he kept that character fresh all those years. And it wasn't just what was on the page. He was just the most brilliant actor. He really was.
I think so too. Now, your character on Dallas, Lucy Ewing, was a manipulative little sex pot with lots of money, no parents. You certainly didn't grow up rich, but I would imagine you totally understood what made Lucy tick.
When I read the description for Lucy Ewing, it was pretty much just how you described her. The description was a manipulative little sex pot born with a silver spoon, has everything money can buy. JR drove her mother and father, Gary and Valerie Ewing, off the ranch, so she has no relationship with her parents. And she goes from man to man. She bed hops, goes from man to man. I got it immediately. I said, "Oh no. It's not about the all of things she has, the materialistic things, and it's not the cars, the clothes, the jewelry, the big ranch. It's not her physical beauty going from man to man. It's because she's got a hole in her heart. She's got a void that she's trying to fill." I knew it. And they wouldn't see me. Barbara Miller, the iconic casting director who had cast me in Eight Is Enough and Code Red and different things, she knew me. She said, "No, Charlene's too young, not experienced enough, whatever." I snuck in every day to the Warner Brothers lot for 2 weeks and ran into her office and said, "Please let me read, let me read." Finally, they said, "Okay, come back tomorrow at 5 o'clock." And I said, "Can I have a script? Sides? No, just show up tomorrow at 5." So the next day, I showed up at 1 o'clock when I knew they would be at lunch, her and her assistant, Irene Mariano. And I went into their office, found a script in the drawer, borrowed it. I won't say stole it, but I borrowed it. And I went with my acting coach, Jeff Corey, and I worked on it and went and did the audition. But I again, like I said with Larry Hagman, it wasn't just what was on the page. There was what was driving Lucy underneath. What was the vulnerability, that void that made her behave that way? What was it in her? I got it right away. I knew it right away. I said, "That part's mine."
Well,
I
the
knew
fact that you knew enough to go and snatch that script in advance proves that you had the soul of Lucy Ewing somewhere inside you. And she had a lot of interesting storylines. She was a troublemaker. She overcame a drug problem. She had lots of affairs, two failed marriages to the same man, an abortion, so much more. Did you have any input into the storylines for Lucy?
no, not really, but when I look back now, Lucy's drug use, her addiction to pills, Lucy was raped, and oh well, let me even before that, Lucy was engaged to be married to Kit Mainwaring, who was the son of the other prominent oil family in Dallas, the Mainwarings. And the son was like Lucy, the heir to this great big family. He was gorgeous and lovely, but he had to admit to me that he wasn't, they couldn't say the word gay, that he had to say homosexual. So he said, "Lucy, I love you too much to go through with this marriage. I have to tell you, I have to confess to you, I'm a homosexual. And JR knows, and he's going to cause a big scandal. He's going to out me." I said, "Oh, no, he's not. I will handle JR." It was that had never been discussed back then. And they handled it so beautifully. And Mark Wheeler, the actor that played it, was phenomenal. That was my favorite storyline for Lucy Ewing, that she was able to protect his privacy and let him reveal what he wanted to reveal on his own terms, not JR or anybody else. So she stopped that. And she was brokenhearted, but it was a beautiful storyline.
It was not only a beautiful storyline, but for young gay men like me, back in the day when we were being told by employers and by our families that, you should just marry a woman because you could just play the game. And that's the way to get ahead in life. When we saw that Kit had the courage to tell you that he was gay and the way you handled it, it was very reinforcing and affirming for people like me who were determined to be authentically ourselves. So thank you for that.
Thank God. Thank you for that. You know, it's interesting. So many of, I have gay friends that have children and tried to go that route just because of what you said. And, I mean, they're grateful that they have kids and whatever, but boy, that they can step into living their life and being proud of them. And then Lucy was also raped and got pregnant from the guy that raped her. So Lucy had to decide, am I going to keep this baby or have an abortion? And she was telling Miss Ellie, "I can't look at this baby every time knowing where this baby came from." Look, we're still discussing that 50 years later, 40 years later. But Lucy chose, with Miss Ellie said, "Whatever you choose." And Lucy chose to have an abortion. Now, while we were filming that whole storyline that stretched on forever, I was actually pregnant with my beautiful daughter that I wanted very much. So Every time I would do those scenes, they would go, cut, go, okay, mommy loves you. I would touch her. I love you. I'm an actress. That's just lines. I love you. And I, back then there were Walkmans. So I put the Walkman headphones around my stomach and I would be playing classical music while they were shooting up my close up, putting classical music. So she was hearing classical music and not hearing me say, I don't want you. I don't want this baby. I don't want.
That's amazing that the synchronicity of you being pregnant at the same time is a very, that was also a very powerful storyline. But I gotta say, I mean, you left the show at the end of season 8, then you were in the last two episodes of season 11, then you became a series regular again in seasons 12 and 13, but you were not in the final season. Why did your character come and go so many times?
I have no idea. When I left the first time, I was shocked. It was 7 years. My contract was up. Everybody's contract was up. And Leonard Katzman, the producer, called me into the studio. I came in one day. I wasn't working. I just came in sweats, no makeup. And he happened to be directing that episode. And he told me, said, I just want to let you know this is what's happening. And he and the powers that be said, this is what we want to do. We want to put out a statement saying that you're choosing to leave the show to pursue other avenues and you want to pursue feature films and everything. And we want to put out that statement and we want to put that and we want you to put out that statement as well. And I said, are you firing me for any reason? And they said, no, we just, to this day, I don't know. I mean, if it was money because other people were now demanding more money, or if they really couldn't decide what to do. My character was now not that teenager. I'd grown, so what could they do with Lucy as she's getting older? Whatever it is. And they said, no, we love you. Your performances are great. But and I said, well, then I'm happy with the truth. I said, no, I'm not going to say that. I'm not comfortable putting out a false statement. So I said, no, they didn't pick up my contract. And that's what I did. And I had that off at the pass. I mean, the minute I left, I went right out there. They were like, no, we wanted to say you left. And I said, no, I didn't leave you. You guys booted me out. So
Well, you did it right because they had your back numerous times.
they had to, when they brought me back, they had asked me back, but I was doing a play and I couldn't do it. I couldn't come back. I was committed to doing a play. And so then when I did come back, Luella, Leonard's secretary, when I came back into the studio and into the office, she said, thank God, finally. And I said, but she goes, the fan mail. And I said, a lot of fan mail. She goes, no, I'm talking petitions. She said, petitions with thousands and thousands and thousands of signatures to bring you back. She goes, the network had to. They had to bring you back. I went, really? She goes, yeah. But you know what? I had my daughter, and it actually was not a bad thing for me because I was able to be a young mother. I was 23, to be a young mother with my newborn baby and be with her.
And was
And
it healing for you to be the mom that you wish you had had?
yes, yeah, it was, in a way, I just read something that is so true. You take care of those closest to you the way you wish you had been taken care of. And
And that's what you did.
yeah, probably overboard, but then, talk about helicopter mom. My daughter's 40 and I'm still like and
I
she's
think
got
that's beautiful.
boys. I've got two little grandsons that I love. I'm with them every day, so
I think that's wonderful. Now, you were a guest star on the 2012 Dallas reboot. Did you like that experience?
I did, actually. I really did. They had sent the script, Steve Kinnaly, and I knew that we were getting a script to come in. So we talked on the phone, said, all right, let's read the script and let's sit down and read the script and we'll talk afterwards. So we read the script and I'm reading, 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 and it's a wedding and it says, Lucy and Ray are there. And we say, congratulations, or something. We have like two lines. And I went, okay. Let me digest this one for a minute. Steve called me. He says, what the hell is this bullshit? I'm not doing this. He said, "What is this? We're just extras. We're nothing in this." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I know, you're right." I said, "But I took time and I prayed about it." And I said, "You know what?" I said, "I think I want to be there to be a support. If I need to go get somebody a cup of coffee, I'll get them a cup of coffee. I want to be there just to be supportive of them, that this can go and be a big success. It's not about Charlene or Lucy or whatever." I said, "So, I don't know, Steve, what do you say?" And he goes, "Damn, you're such a much better person than I am." I said, "No, I said, believe me, I just took time and prayed about it. And that's what I feel I'm supposed to do." So we went and did it. And on the air at the airport on the way home, Steve and his wife and I were there, and they said, "Thank you, Charlene. We had the best time. We wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for you convincing us to, so thank you." And it was fun.
I think you attract good karma. I think that was very mature of you, and it was generous, and all of that comes back to you. Now, I want to take you back to February 21st, 1981. That was the night you hosted Saturday Night Live, and Prince was the musical guest. Did you have a good time doing that show?
I did. I was nervous, but I was too young and dumb to be as nervous as I really should have been. They put me up at the Plaza Hotel in New York, which was lovely. So I'm coming down the elevator with my manager because they had sent a car to take me to 30 Rock for our first day of rehearsal. So I'm in the elevator, and then the elevator door opens and enters a gentleman who's actually about my size. And with another very tall gentleman. And the gentleman who was about my size was very thin, but wearing these platform shoes that were like this. And I said, "Oh my gosh." I said, "Excuse me, I don't mean to bother you, but where did you get those shoes?" I said, I'm an actress. I'm doing this show this week. And I said, "Did you get those here in New York? I need to get a pair of shoes like that. I need really big high platform shoes. Where did you get them?" And he says, "Well, I know who you are. And I'm going to be doing Saturday Night Live with you. I'm Prince." And I said, he says, "I'm the unbilled musical guest." And I said, "Oh, great." 'Cause they always had a musical guest and an unbilled musical guest. So we talked. Todd Rundgren was the musical guest. So they had two cars. But we were talking, and I wanted to. And we decided just to take the car. We got in one car. And so my manager, the gentleman who was with him, and he and I, we took the same car to 30 Rock. And we kept on talking. And as per usual, it was all about me, 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 me. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I'm so nervous." And he's like, "You're going to be fine." He goes, "You're going to be really great. I can tell you're going to be wonderful." And he was just like, "So calm. You're going to be great." So we get out there. It was very inappropriate. I walked into the room of the writers and everything, and I did not know my place would have been not to open my mouth. But I said, "I have an idea for a sketch that I would really like to do." And at that time, the Chicken of the Sea tuna commercials were huge. "Ask any mermaid you happen to see, what's the best tuna? Chicken of the Sea." So I said, "I want to be the Chicken of the Sea mermaid." Now, of course, they hadn't done the Broadway musical of Sunset Boulevard or the remake, but I said, "I want to do it like Norma Desmond. I want this Chicken of the Sea mermaid to be Norma Desmond with a martini and a cigarette going, 'Yeah, this, I was the biggest, most famous mermaid of them all. And I was the biggest fish in the sea.' And I had this idea for this sketch." And Eddie Murphy said, "That's really funny." He goes, "That's a great idea." He goes, "I'd like to do something like that with you." And I was like, so Eddie Murphy and I did a script, a scene together. It became Underwater Cop. So I was a mermaid, and you only see me from the. She's fierce. She gets the bad guy. And anyway, I'm a mermaid. I'm a mermaid cop. That's what it ended up being. So we go and we shoot the show, and I go. My introduction is, "Ladies and gentlemen, Prince." He performed, and the world changed. We knew. right then and there that the world changed.
And you rode in the limo with him going there. Can you imagine? What an it, well, that show also featured a skit based on the Who Shot JR episode. And Charles Rocket, who played JR, was fired after that episode for using the F word on camera. How did you feel about that?
Well, we're sitting there, and there it's at the end of the show. It's the very end of the show, and he drops the F-bomb. And I thought to myself, oh, wow. I mean, I know it's late night, but I didn't know you could say the F-word on TV. I mean, I thought that to myself. Well, it went out live on the New York time. They edited out for West Coast time. I believe he was fired before he left the stage. It was bad. I was like, oh, I'm not quite sure how the firing happened, but I knew, and I was like, oh, I felt bad for him. He was very talented.
Yeah, that was the most expensive F-bomb anybody's ever dropped to lose a job over that. Now, in 1979, you made a TV movie that I loved called The Fall of the House of Usher with the legendary Martin Landau, and Ray Walston was in it too. What was it like working with them?
Marty was so great, Marty. Martin Landau was so great. He would just tell stories. And he would come over to my house after we got to know each other and film. And I would love to listen to all of his stories. And he was a member of the Actors Studio. And he was so inspirational and just this actor. And he was amazing. And Ray Walston was just, he became a dear friend of mine as well. He was precious.
Yeah, that was a wonderful movie. I have to mention Charlene Tilton, the singer. Your 1984 hit song, C'est la Vie, was a huge success in Europe and Asia. It didn't get the same exposure here in North America. Do you know why?
Well, first of all, because I'm not a good singer, that's number one. It was a fluke. It was a fluke. I happened to be at a theatrical manager's house who had some big clients and that were there, and everyone was singing around the piano, and I was just singing, goofing off, and just with everybody else. And someone says, "Well, I run RCA in Europe, and we'd love to have you sing." And I was like, I don't sing. And he said, no, you're good enough and we can fix it, whatever. So anyway, I went and did it. But at that time, they were trying to get a lot of the TV stars. They did it with Cheryl Ladd, Linda Carter. They could really sing. I mean, they're genuine singers. I was not. And David Hasselhoff had a big music career. Again, he's a singer. I did a little pop song, C'est la Vie, which was really catchy. And it just caught on in the clubs and things like that. C'est la vie, why worry? C'est la vie, whatever will be, will be. I mean, it was just this little silly song, and I had a great time recording it. And it is me singing, but not any great shakes for sure.
Well, I think they should have released it in America and made a big hit out of it. Now, I read that
Actually
it.
did get to sing, though, not too long ago. I did Snow White at the play at the Pasadena Playhouse. I played the Wicked Queen, and Ariana Grande was Snow White, and Neil Patrick Harris was the Mirror. And so I did get to sing in that. But I'll tell you, with that beautiful Miss Ariana Grande, we were doing three shows a day. That girl had, talk about work ethic. She was amazing. She was vocalizing before every show. She was amazing. Came in the first day, didn't even have a script in her hand for rehearsal. She was on top of it.
Yeah,
And
she's a real pro.
yeah, and so was Neil Patrick Harris, of course, too. So
I read that at one point you were offered the role of Rizzo in Grease, but you turned it down. Is that right?
I did. Again, it was at one of those times, they had sort of a revolving door of people, anywhere from Rosie O'Donnell to maybe Brooke Shields did it, I think. They had all these different people coming in and playing Rizzo. Again, I'm not a great singer. Some of those people were really good singers, but I definitely knew I could have acted Rizzo out. And I even went and met with the musical director. I said, I'm really nervous. And he said, you've got this. He said, trust me, what I just heard you do, he goes, your voice is great. and you know this character, you can do it. But my daughter was just starting high school, and the transition from junior high to high school was already tough enough. And I just thought, she knew all her friends. She knew the high school that she was going to. It was a performing arts high school. And I just thought, I can't take her off to New York where she doesn't know anybody, or she's already really looking forward to this high school experience with all of her friends. And it just, it, or for me to go off on my own without being there for her, it just, it,
You
I
know
had to.
something, Miss Charlene Tilton? Your priorities are screwed on so well. You really deserve you. The best way to honor your mother is the motherhood that you've demonstrated. I'm so impressed. Now, I have to also mention in 1994, you were in a very funny movie called Silence of the Hams, co-starring Dom DeLuise. Did you get to know him at all?
I did. He was magnificent. That movie is so good. And Billy Zane and I were together not too long ago because they released it on Blu-ray or something. They put it out. And then they had, so Billy Zane and I were doing some behind the scenes talking about it. I've only seen the movie once. And so and it's been years. I'm watching it. That movie was good. Billy Zane was hysterical. My character was, it was really a good, funny movie. I don't even know where you can find it or where it's on, but if anyone can find Silence of the Hams, obviously a spin-off on Silence on the Lambs, a sp satire spoof, and Psycho. So it's really good.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned it. I want my viewers to check it out. Another thing that really amazed me about you, in 2012, you were a contestant on season 7 of the British ice skating show Dancing on Ice. Your partner was the famous figure skater Matthew Gonzalez. You made it all the way to week 5, which is pretty darn good in my opinion. What was that experience like?
It was amazing. My little Maddie Gonzalez, I loved him, but they had come to Los Angeles casting. They wanted to get like two Hollywood celebrities to come on to compete with the British celebrities that they, or other celebrities they were going to have. And I had just gone through an episode that my fiance, who I was engaged to, we married, we were together for 7 years, and he passed away all this unexpectedly. I said, honey, what's wrong? And anyway, boom, he dropped dead, and it was unexpected. So that sent me into a bit of a tailspin. I was just sitting on the couch drinking, not doing anything, and then I hear this voice from God saying, like, are you just going to lay here and join Chetty, or do you want to live the life I have for you? And I said, okay. Well, psychology 101, you know the best way to get out of your own pity party or your own troubles is to go help somebody else. So that's how I became involved with Actors for Autism. I knew somebody who was involved with that, which is a whole other story. And I started, that's what brought me to teaching there. But from that moment on, I said, I'm saying yes to everything. I'm just going to say yes to everything. So they called me for Dancing on Ice, and they met me at the ice skating rink in Burbank, California. My daughter came with me. I am the most unathletic person on the planet. I cannot run. I can't throw a ball. I can't catch a ball. I can't. I'm really unathletic. I can't do anything.
And did you know how to skate before the show?
No, I'd never skated. I skated once on Fantasy Island. My fantasy was to become a figure skater. And they had an Olympic coach there. And he said, you know, honestly, if you would have trained, you could have been a natural. My feet go out like this. I waddle like a duck. That's how I walk. My feet are turned out like this. And you put the skates on, and for some reason, I can balance. But I never really skate. So I never skated except for an hour on Fantasy Island. So I go to the Dancing on Ice thing, and they put me in skates, and lo and behold, I'm kind of skating. And they're like, wow. And you've never skated before? I said, no, never. And I could do a little turn and I could go this way and that way. I don't know. It just happened. And
That's really quite miraculous.
it was, yeah, very bizarre. So anyway,
Now you're going to think this is bizarre, but I think your husband helped you.
I think so. I know he didn't. I'll tell you why. That's so weird that you said that. Because after he passed away, I would continue to walk our dog around the dog park where I always walked every day. There was this butterfly, and it was the same butterfly that would follow me all the way around when I would walk the dog. And at first, I didn't think anything, but that same butterfly would come around every day for like 2 weeks and would go our walk. And at first, I thought, it's a beautiful butterfly. But then I was like, that's really bizarre. I could tell by the markings it was the same butterfly. After 2 weeks, anyway, it stopped. So years later, couple years later, I'm in London in the studio in the middle of winter on an ice rink that's built in a studio. They're doing an interview with me, so you could talk about how was your day training and da, 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 da. And they're doing this interview with me. And the butterfly comes and lands on my shoulder
In a studio.
in the studio. The camera, everybody was like, what's a butterfly doing there? And I went, I knew exactly. And I went, wow.
Yeah, you're giving me goosebumps. I
And I
just know
said,
that he helped you. I think you have a lot of guardian angels around you. That's how you got through your childhood. And your deceased husband, God rest his soul, is one of them.
yeah, that was true. But when we were doing the interview for Dancing on Ice, so afterwards they said, this is amazing. And you didn't even fall once. And my daughter and I started laughing so hard. We were just like doubled over laughing. And the producers, and we had Torval and Dean, the famous p figure skaters, Olympic figure skaters there. And everyone was like, what's so funny? And they said, what is so funny? What's so funny? I said, do you want to tell them, Cherish, or should I? She goes, oh no, let me tell them, Mom. She goes, I said, Cherish, what do I do more than any person on the planet? She says, fall down. And I said, that's true. Up the stairs, down the stairs, high heels, sneakers, standing still, couple glasses of wine, completely sober. I fall all the time. And I didn't fall ice skating, not once.
A miracle. Honestly, the fact that you didn't skate except for once on Fantasy Island and you managed to get to week five, I was so impressed. And I want to mention something else. 2 years ago, you starred in a wonderful movie called Heaven Sent, which was about a beautiful friendship between two women in their 60s. I always felt that movie should have been turned into a TV series like the Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin one, don't you think?
Why didn't they? That's a brilliant idea. Why didn't they do that?
I don't know, but the friendship of two senior women, which we saw with Grace and Frankie, the Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin
My
show.
favorite show. Oh, I binge
Yeah.
watched that like 10 times. I just kept watching that over and over again.
But Heaven Sent really should have been spun off into a series. So now I got to tell you that.
That Heaven Sent movie, I think it's on PureFlix. That's probably, my daughter says it's my favorite thing you've ever done. It was, I loved it. It was so good. The movie itself was so good, and I loved it.
Well, maybe that was the best thing you'd ever done up to that point. But your current movie, Final Recovery, which is on Amazon Prime and Tubi, it's a horror thriller. Can you tell us a little bit about how you managed to deliver such a mesmerizing performance? You're getting rave reviews everywhere.
The reviews are like incredible. I've never done a horror movie before. I can't watch like the movie Saw or Chucky or things like that. I can't do that. I love thrillers, but I'm not good with the horror genre watching them. But I was offered this movie, and I play a woman who runs a drug rehabilitation center, which I felt I believe is a very important topic anyway. And because it took place It's not a Christmas movie, but it takes place around Christmas. So I went and bought all these Christmas sweaters. So all through the movie, my character, Nanny Lou, is wearing all these Christmas sweaters. And it says, in the script, it said I crochet. So I had somebody I know that crochets, that crochet could started a crocheted Christmas tree and a crocheted Santa Claus, and taught me how to crochet enough that I could, during the filming, I could be finishing it. So I came with, and I brought my own props. I have a coffee cup, that Christmas coffee cup that says joy. So all these things in my little sweet Christmas sweaters with snowmen and Santa Claus. I am helping these drug addicted people, but we don't know that Nanny Lou is, just as they're about to be released and gone through their treatment, she slips some drugs and is getting them hooked back into her. And then when they start to complain, they disappear. How do they disappear? You'll have to watch the movie to find out what Nanny Lou has going on in her basement.
Well, how does it feel to have the critics saying that you are the next Kathy Bates from Misery?
I know they were comparing me to Kathy Bates in Misery or Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and saying that I'm the scariest, because, and I knew, because it looks like I'm the sweetest little grandmother with my little Christmas sweater, and I wear these little girl barrettes in my hair, because the movie opens where you see my character at 10 years old witnessing her father being killed by a drug addict, and that's how the movie opens. And I know from personal experience, but when a child's, especially at a young age, goes through any kind of trauma, there's something that stunts their growth right then and there. There's something that stops. So to me, it wasn't in the script, it was nothing, but I just wore little girl barrettes just in my hair, like a little 10-year-old girl would wear. That's all, just a little thing.
Well, again, for the benefit of our viewers, the movie is called Final Recovery. You can see it on Amazon Prime or Tubi, and you will see a very different Charlene Tilton. But that script, that story, and that character are going to stay with you a long time. Charlene, when I was doing my research for this interview, I came across a very poignant, very eye-opening interview you did with People Magazine a few years ago. You talked about your incredibly different childhood. You said something that really touched me. You said you've always been an optimist who sees the bright side of things, and that's what has sustained you during tumultuous times. Where do you think that optimism came from?
Honestly, it's a gift of God. It's a gift from God, or however you're wired. I wasn't born with long legs, but I have this gift of optimism, and I love to encourage people. My daughter says you can walk in anywhere and everyone won't be talking. She says within 15 minutes, Mom, you will have everybody thinking they've been best friends and you have brought everybody together. I love doing that, and I don't know. It's a gift. It is a gift. Now, I still have to do a lot of meditating, and I do a lot of things that I've learned over the years to stop my fight or flight reflexes, because I can also go to when my daughter started driving, oh my God, there's going to be an accident in the, I can go that way real quick too. So I have to, like the Bible says, bring every thought into captivity to the glory of God. Well, every time those scary bad thoughts, I got to take control of them. And any negative thoughts, I got to take control of them. It's easier said than done sometimes. In AA, where they say it's one day at a time, well, sometimes it's 1 minute at a time. You got to rein it in. Meditation, breathing, whatever it takes to get you personally, whoever. I just try to be calm and look at people and be present. I live on a lake, a beautiful lake, and there's a restaurant that is open to the lake. It's just a casual neighborhood place. And I was And I love to go. I love the blue hare and the cranes, the ducks, the geese. I love my lake. So I'm walking by this restaurant that's open to the lake, and it was lunchtime. And all these people are waiting, and they're all sitting there facing this beautiful lake. And as I walk, I see everyone, and there's about 20 people there. They're all just sitting facing the lake, some with sitting next to somebody else. And I had to step back and take a picture. Every one of them was
On
like
their
this,
phones, on their phones.
on their phone, like this, sitting next to somebody. And I'm like, you're missing the, there's 40 pelican out there. There's a swarm of, there's a gaggle of geese. There's pelicans out there. This, and you're sitting there like this. And I'm like, take a second, for God's sake. And I took a picture. I have it on my phone. I just stepped back and took a picture of just all these people. Boy.
Well, have you ever thought about writing a memoir? I mean, look at the life you've lived and look at the lessons you've learned and look at the way you can teach.
I never thought about teaching, but I know I'm supposed to write my memoir. At years ago, I went to Simon and Schuster in New York, and we were discussing it then, but the person who brought me in passed away, and then it just fell by the wayside. My daughter says it to me every day, and I do. Yes, I need to. I never thought about the teaching aspect.
Well,
I
look at what you've said in this interview. Look at how many life lessons you've shared in this interview, particularly about how you deal with anxiety or worry. Just that alone is incredibly helpful because you're one of the people that survived an almost impossible childhood. And you did it so well and you did it publicly. So I hope you do write a book and then I can get you to come back.
I would love it. How did you, doing the background that you came from, that I don't know how people do what you did, because, or doctors or nurses, and just dealing with all seeing so much trauma from different people putting, and it's on you. I mean, how did
Well,
you deal with that?
I've written a book too, and it'll come out next year, and it's going to talk about all of that. And it will come out next year, and it's about overcoming a lot of obstacles in my youth and homophobia as an adult to become Canada's first openly gay judge. But this is all about you. I think that you could do a lot of good with a book like that. You could help heal a lot of people who had traumatic childhoods or traumatic adulthoods. And you're also an incredibly unique role model in show business because of what you've been through and how you've managed your career and what you've talked about, how you put your child's life ahead of your career. Even that was quite a message. So I have to tell you, it's been such a pleasure meeting you and having this chance to chat with you about your wonderful life and career. Thank you for all the great performances. Thank you for your openness in sharing your life journey with all of us. And most of all, thank you for taking the time to appear on our show.
Thank you. I can't wait to read your book, and thank you for all of that. And thank you for talking about You've Got to Believe, that organization. My Seth Rudesky and James Wesley, who run that organization in New York. Oh, they are an important organization to help foster kids in New York City, especially the ones aging out of the system.
Very, very important organization, and I'm proud of you for being involved in it. Thank you again so much for being on our show. Our guest has been the incomparable Charlene Tilton. Don't miss her brand new movie, Final Recovery, which is now appearing on Amazon Prime and Tubi. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my managers, Rick Marcelli and Robin Bragg Marcelli of the Marcelli Company in Hollywood, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my editor, Isaiah Charalampadis, and my entire team at the XPTV1 network in the UK.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.